We have Mr. Basil Manuel, who's the executive director at NPTOSA. We're chatting about the school's readiness with regards to plans moving ahead to reopen schools in South Africa. Good morning, Mr. Manuel, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Masanga. Basil, please.
thank you for giving us that liberty. So the Department of Basic Education previously gazetted that Monday, the 26th of July, would be the official reopening date for schools. Should we be concerned? How much should we know with regards to the preparedness and making a firm decision and a safe decision for our school children?
Well, Sanga, last night we met with the Department of Education in the form of the DG, as well as the heads of department of the provinces, precisely to deal with concerns around readiness. Not readiness to reopen with in the system that we had up to now, where we've had rotational learning, but rather the larger number of learners coming back, you know, come the second. Because that is of concern, given that there are many schools that are overcrowded. There are still issues of water. There's issues of as simple as furniture. And, of course, we've been given a number of assurances. And, first of all, there is an indication that should the alert level come down, which we all expect over the weekend, then, of course, schools will open on the 26th. Because it will still be in the old framework of rotation. And then there's still a week to ensure that those provinces that still have one or two things outstanding will get them in place. Now, there are basics, like the PPEs, that everybody knows about. And this is irritating because some people are still scrambling around to ensure that schools will have sufficient. It's not about just having. Now you've got to cater for the larger group. And then, of course, some schools are getting in some provinces mobile classrooms. But then, of course, there's schools in KZN that have suffered so much damage during this last week and a half, where 139 schools were damaged. And that sets up a secondary problem. And one of the sad issues is that the province simply just doesn't have money, they say, to do all the repairs that they ought to. And at least one of those schools will not reopen any time in the near future. So there are glitches. However, we will meet again on Wednesday to take the final report on the full cohort of primary school learners coming back. But certainly, Monday is on the cards.
So, Basil, it seems as if it's very much hasn't changed, and in effect, the social inequality and some of the historical challenges themselves have been worsened. Are we at a better or a worse place? And when you talk about some of the more poorer and underprivileged schools, you mentioned the basics like water and sanitation. Whose responsibility is that?
Oh, the responsibility has to lie with government, and in this case, the Department of Education. Of course, there's always some blame shifting that goes on, especially when it comes to water. Municipalities aren't doing the infrastructure, municipalities aren't paying their bills, and so on. And then, of course, there are the realities that we have certain very dry areas that have been suffering from drought for the last 4 or 5 years. And there, the water has just simply dried up. And boreholes have been sunk, and they've dried up. So there's got to be a little understanding in some places. However, for 30 years, some schools didn't have water, running water, and that's unforgivable. But a lot of progress was made during this period because the unions, including NPTOSA, put pressure, applied far more pressure when it became more widely known that some of these rural schools are in such a perilous state. But we are not making the progress we ought to make, Wasanga. And that is where the crime lies. The haves continue having, and the have-nots continue having nothing or even less. And there's got to be a far greater social compact around the provision and the upgrading of schools. For too long, we are saying the budgetary constraints, and we know we're in a bad economic period. However, we can't continue using that as an excuse. There has been no special provision made to ensure that schools are a place of dignity. Because at the end of the day, some of these rob the children of dignity. There just is no dignity in a pit latrine. There is no dignity in a crumbling school or a mud school. And this is the point we've been making over and over again. At the same time, those same children can't be held back and not have anything whilst we dither. So communities will go to the schools that are not 100% fit for occupation because kids can't lose out. And so it's a very, very difficult one. And then the authorities sit back and they say, but the people are using the facility. But that is where the problem lies. We can't continually be foregrounding that as a reason why we are not doing enough.
Basil, my biggest bugbear is with local governance. And as a student of local governance, municipalities are the voice of the disenfranchised. And to a certain extent, a lot of the frustration, a lot of the unanswered service delivery and the historical challenges come from these ward councillors, come from the student governing bodies who have been invisible. Where are they and what can we do to make sure that those who are underprivileged don't fall behind?
Well, Sanga, that is the eternal problem. Our local governments are simply just bad. And of course, we can even see that with the management of finances, how much just goes to waste. We've seen the report from the Auditor General, and that the vast majority of our municipalities are in fact just simply non-functional. And if they are non-functional, basics such as running water get impacted. The supply of electricity is being cut off in certain areas, and we have Eskom now starting to take over. And how then do we have progress? How then do we talk about 21st century
4IR
subjects and learning and 4IR? You know, it doesn't become a topic of discussion when you are talking about basics like water.
How do we get to a situation where children are crossing rivers barefoot, taking off their pants to a certain extent? We have women who are holding ropes so that the children don't get washed away. And then you give them iPads, and then you give them paperless classrooms. How do we get to that point? How do we miss the basics, such as a grumbling stomach in a classroom who cannot concentrate on anything, when you give them electronic paperless classrooms and these iPads? How do we get there, Basil?
Well, Sonia, let me not only be harsh. Let me also say that the one success story, even albeit a little forced, is the provision of food. I think that we are today at a better place because every child in a primary school does get the opportunity to eat. And that is a good one. But I suppose when it comes to developments around 4IR, when some things of the 18th century aren't done, but you're doing something of the 21st century, you've got to accept, I suppose, sometimes that I grudgingly accept that we can't hold back the 21st century because we haven't built the toilet that we should have in the 18th century. Now, it sounds incorrect, but of course we foreground places like India, and we say they are in a very similar situation, and yet they have moved into the 21st century in schools with things like computer-based knowledge. But it's going to be a difficult road for still the next generation unless we have a dedicated setting aside of funds for schools. And we actually do what we should do, not only pay lip service to it, because that's the other danger, is that we tend to talk about these things, pay lip service to them, beat our breasts, and of course make these wonderful pronouncements, especially at this time when we talk about elections, and then we don't get to seeing a single brick and mortar being added. Even the provision of